And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day if you're a fan of the Marvel comic universe, cosmic universe. The MCU, Marvel Comic Universe, is out with its latest installment, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. It's playing in theaters. It's around the country. Is it worth your trip, worth your attention? Well, we'll talk about that. And we'll talk about a much better movie that is actually opening on HBO, about a very different kind of superhero who survived incredible horrors during World War II and the Holocaust, and went on to pursue a boxing career, unlikely boxing career, actually fought Rocky Marciano. It's a true story. That in a movie called The Survivor, and then another movie that I'm still trying to figure out called Escape the Field, about a group of strangers who wake up in a mysterious, cosmic, otherworldly cornfield that they cannot escape. We will get to all of that on the Michael Medved Show. We also are going to be talking about superheroes from 1,000 years ago. A lot of people have seen the excellent movie, in my opinion, one of the better movies of the whole year, the movie The Northmen, which is about Vikings. And it's also very contemporary because right now, in terms of what's going on in the world, NATO is going to be strengthened phenomenally by the addition of Sweden and and Finland, two great Nordic countries. So what is it about those countries? What is it about the Viking heritage? Nobody better to talk to about that than the author of the best-selling book, The Viking Heart, How Scandinavians Conquered the World. His name is Arthur Herman. He is a fellow of the Hudson Institute, and he's also going to be talking to us at this moment about defending NATO, including those new Nordic members, defending NATO with better anti-missile systems. Arthur, that's a long introduction, but you're a man of many interests and many focuses and profound accomplishment. So welcome.
Well, that's a marvelous introduction. Thank you, Michael. It's always a pleasure to be on your show, and always happy to talk about things relating to matters Nordic. And
well, again,
the big change that's taken place now with NATO, with this shift northward, I think is going to be hugely, hugely significant, especially for NATO, but also for the United States, if you think about what they bring to the table as two nations that know what it's like to have Russia as a neighbor, and who are I think have been waiting a long time for them to become part of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization.
Yeah, and I believe we were talking about this yesterday, that that Finland, little Finland, which is less than 5 million population, is the only country in the history of the world that has ever turned back a Russian invasion. Russia is known for turning back invasions by Napoleon and by Hitler. But in terms of actually a little country turning back a Russian invasion, that winter war that Finland waged is unique, right?
It is. I mean, we have to be precise. The Russians did finally win, in the sense that conflict in 1939, when they brought their full weight to bear, and when the Finns, unlike the Ukrainians, had no significant outside help in their sort of David versus Goliath confrontation with the Russians, but boy, did they give the Red Army a very hard time for 2-3 months there in the winter of 1939, and at the same time, like today's Ukraine, they really earned the admiration of the world for being able to stand up to a power which had assumed that they would simply roll over the Finns in a matter of weeks, and it didn't quite turn out that way. But, you know, the other thing to keep in mind about this, Michael, is that the Finns have this extraordinary record in the 20th century, and that is that they fought wars against Russia not once, but not twice, but three times. The war that won them their independence in 1919, the Winter War of 1939, which you just referenced, that in the end they had to capitulate to the superior Soviet strength, but still they really broke the spirit of the Red Army and encouraged others to realize that it was not the powerhouse that people had imagined. And then again in 1945, when they fought the Soviets again and managed to hold on to their independence when they were caught between both the Nazis on one side and the Soviets on the other. It's an extraordinary story, extraordinary nation, extraordinary people. And I think by becoming a member of NATO, they are really going to add a measure of strength and determination and resolution that, frankly, has been kind of missing from European members of NATO up until very recently.
1-800-955-1776, our phone number. When you look at the Nordic nations, what people refer to as Scandinavia, and Norway, Denmark, Finland, Sweden, and Iceland, those five nations, I mean, they always dominate. I mean, they just did a list of the happiest nations in the world, and all of the Nordic mm-hmm. nations were in the top 10, and with Finland yep. number one. And given the fact that you can have what's kind of forbidding weather for most of the year and still come out as rated one of the happiest nations in the world, what is it about the common heritage of these Nordic nations that has allowed them to become so successful in virtually every measure?
Well, I mean, they really hit above their weight, don't they? And they have for centuries. And they continue to astonish us in terms of what countries with, you know, very meager natural resources, crappy climate, you know, dark for, what, 5 months out of the year every winter? And then at the same time as well, having languages which are both are distinct from each other and not really shared with the rest of the world in any kind of broad sense. And I think my book, The Viking Heart, which you mentioned at the beginning of our interview, the Viking Heart is really my attempt to explain what is the Scandinavian secret. And I think that what I would have to conclude, and that I hope readers, when they finish the book, will conclude as well, is that it's this extraordinary combination, on the one hand, of a strong sense of community, which develops in a kind of climate and a geography like Scandinavia, where survival in those incredibly harsh winters is a matter of group survival. You have to work together in order to survive in a world like that, in an ecosystem like that. So on the one hand, very strong sense of community values, community solidarity from the family up to the nation, but at the same time, of a willingness to allow individuals to follow their own path, because you understand that it is the bold and entrepreneurial individuals who set out, as they did in the age of the Vikings, set out in their longships to venture out, to bring back the resources the community needs to survive and to thrive.
Yeah, they got on those primitive ships all the way to North America, and then on the other side in the Mediterranean to Constantinople. We will get to more with Arthur Herman coming up. And on the Michael Medved Show, my pleasure to be speaking to Arthur Herman of the Hudson Institute. He is the author of a new book. It is a bestseller. It is coming out in paperback next month. The book is called The Viking Heart, How Scandinavians Conquered the World. And you point out that back in January of this year, you wrote about how Sweden and Finland joining NATO, which now looks like it will happen, would create huge opportunities, and that would also help to deter Putin. Why would Putin care particularly about these two nations? Sweden, a population of 10 million. Finland, a population of less than 5 million. Why would that matter so much to Vladimir Putin?
Well, it matters to him, I think, for a couple of reasons. Number one is the expansion of NATO on Putin's northern flank is not the outcome that he expected to have happen from his threatened and then invasion of Ukraine. He assumed that this was going to break the spirit of NATO, that other countries would be apprehensive about drawing close to NATO because they wouldn't want to be exposed to the, you know, the Russian military juggernaut. Well, guess what? The juggernaut turns out to have very wobbly wheels and is now pretty much stuck in a conflict, which now Ukraine looks like they might win. But even at the time, and I wrote that piece, as you noticed, Michael, before the invasion of Ukraine, is that the Baltic region is one of the key vulnerabilities for Russia in a strategic sense. Because if you have both Sweden and Finland becoming NATO and therefore pro-Western, pro-U.S. Allies, you have basically turned the Baltic Sea into a NATO lake, because the other Baltic republics, Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, are all also NATO members. And what this means is that you're able to put the squeeze on St. Petersburg, on the Russian enclave in what used to be Königsberg, facing onto the Baltic, puts enormous pressure to bear on Russia's traditional window onto the West, which was why St. Petersburg was founded in the first place. But there's also another aspect of this too, Michael, that I don't think Americans think about very much, but we're going to have to start thinking about it a lot. And that is that the Arctic, thanks to climate change, has now become increasingly a navigable sea and is going to become another important strategic area for geopolitical competition, particularly with Russia. And to have those countries that face onto the Arctic will also give us a chance to give NATO a chance to have yet another front to distract and to make Putin hesitate about moves and that he takes in other kinds of directions, and to make him realize the degree to which this war in Ukraine really has become a major overreach and colossal blunder for both the survival of his regime, but also for Russia's place in the balance of power in Europe. I think what we can say now is that the balance of power in Europe is now shifting steadily westward to NATO, thanks to the invasion. And Sweden and Finland joining NATO will simply, I think, tip the balance even more to the West's favor. Not the outcome that Putin expected, I can tell you.
Well, thank goodness for that. And what one of the things that no one expected, but should have probably, is Putin threatening the world with nuclear weapons. You have been talking about defensive missile technology, protection against nuclear attack. You've been talking about that for years. Should Americans speed up the process of the kind of research and development for defensive weapons, a new kind of defensive weapons that you've been talking about?
I think so. I think if we, and this applies not just in the Russian case, it applies to Iran, it applies to North Korea, it applies to any nation which has developed ballistic missile technology that's capable of delivering nuclear weapons. What we have to understand is that if we are going to rely on solely on ground-based systems to protect ourselves from ballistic missile attack, we are selling ourselves short from a defensive point of view, a deterrence point of view. That airborne missile defense, which means a missile defense that relies on what we call unmanned vehicles or drones, the technology is there. It's waiting to be developed and deployed. That kind of technology can give us that extra layer of protection and security that not only helps to protect the United States, our homeland, from long-range ballistic missile attacks, but can also protect NATO countries from ballistic missile blackmail. It can protect countries in East Asia, like Japan and South Korea and Taiwan, from similar threats, and will make dictators, people like Putin and like Kim Jong-un, think twice about the way in which they're able to threaten the world with their missiles of destruction. And this is, I think, the degree to which we need to really think about a multi-layer missile defense for ourselves, for our allies, has got to be part of our future defense strategy and defense priorities in the next decade or so. Otherwise, we're missing a huge opportunity. And I think also, Michael, opening us up to dangers that we just don't really need to face and can't afford to face.
Now, again, when you talk about some of the hostile actors in the world, it's obvious that one of the blessings for the United States is we have the right allies. I mean, most of the admirable countries on Earth are clear allies of the United States, and it's a time to think about that. One of the stunning news stories, which you haven't covered yet from today, is that apparently the World Health Organization is now saying that the number of deaths from COVID-19 were underestimated by two-thirds. It was actually three times the number of deaths, and most of that is because they missed some 5 million estimated deaths in India. That's not what Arthur Herman's work is about. His book is The Viking Heart, How Scandinavians Conquered the World. What about conquering the movie world? We'll be back with that and with more political consequences on the Supreme Court coming up.